Welcome back to Total Information AM. Tom Ackerman taking some time away. I'm Megan Lynch. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to consider whether statewide bans on medical treatment for transgender youth are constitutional. Let's talk about that and other legal news with KMOX legal analyst Brad Young, partner at Harris, Dow, Fisher & Young. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Megan.
So this is a Tennessee law. What specifically does it prohibit?
Well, it prohibits all medical treatments that are intended to allow a minor to identify with or live as a different gender than what their birth gender would indicate. So really, ostensibly, Megan, it seems like this is just an issue about transgenderism and whether or not a state can prohibit surgical procedures for minors. Again, this only applies to minors. But it really gets into a much, much bigger issue because the question becomes, what types of freedoms or constitutional freedoms do minors enjoy? This whole argument here is based on the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause, meaning that people cannot be treated differently under the Constitution. But we know there's a long list of Supreme Court precedent that outlines how minors are treated differently. Free speech, you know, kids can't say whatever they want in school, believe it or not. Search and seizure, kids in school, you don't, a principal doesn't need a warrant to search a locker. So there are constitutional situations where minors enjoy different levels of protection and freedom under the Constitution. So the really question in this court, much bigger than simply transgender care, but to what extent are minors protected and enjoy constitutional rights because they are, in fact, minors? That's really what the court has to identify here.
What's Tennessee's argument for upholding this law?
Tennessee's argument is really an argument that outlines in the court. I read the briefs to the court, and the argument that Tennessee has is essentially this. First, that a state has a right to control the medical care within the state. But secondly, that there is an enormous body of evidence. I don't know if this is true or not, but the state asserts that there is a body of evidence where people who have gender changing surgery as a minor grow up to regret that. So their point is that it's the state's duty to protect minors until they become adults to the point where they can make rational decisions on their own.
Why do you think the high court decided to take this case? Because I don't believe it's the first one of its kind to be considered by the court, correct?
No, it's not the first of its kind. And there's been other cases that have danced around this issue. For example, there was a case a few years ago, the Bostock case, that dealt with Title VII employment law and to what extent can laws dictate or discriminate against individuals who identify as a different gender. But I think what the case is here, Megan, is this idea of minors. And I think that's what attracted the court to this, because the question becomes, how do our constitutional privileges under the 14th Amendment, how do they apply to minors, and to what extent do they apply to minors? There's no question it would apply to adults here, but I think that's really the focus here, and I'm glad the court's taking this up to really identify that application.
Well, and I would think, and I don't know, but the fact that there are quite a few states at this point that have similar laws, does that, you know, play into the court deciding to take a case like this?
Absolutely, because clearly this is going to be an issue that's going to be litigated. There are many states, as you just said, who are trying to create legal dictates in terms of what can or cannot be done with minors. So the way to nip that in the bud, so to speak, is to decide this now, lay out these constitutional guidelines to guide states as they wrestle with whether and to what extent we should be regulating transgender care.
We're speaking with KMOX legal analyst Brad Young. Let's move to the next story out this week. A group of Louisiana parents has filed a federal lawsuit. They're objecting to a state law there that requires that the Ten Commandments be posted in every public school classroom. As I was looking at the story, I feel like I have not seen a Ten Commandments legal battle in some time.
Well, you're right, Megan. Your instincts are right. The last time this was really dealt with was way back in 1980. And in essence, the 1980 case is identical to the current situation. where the Ten Commandments were being posted on the wall. The poster was funded by a private group so that you don't have the government paying for it. And the issue was, does that violate the Establishment Clause of the Constitution? Back in 1980, the case was Stone versus Graham, and they dealt with this specific situation. And the court held then that it was unconstitutional to do this. The basis of the decision was that the Ten Commandments were posted on the wall. And the court ruled in 1980 that posting on the wall, where it's there every day, all day, throughout the school year, established it as something more than simply being studied in the classroom. In fact, the court in 1980, Megan, said, if this were part of a curriculum studying, for example, how the Ten Commandments impacted our judicial system, impacted our legal history and the development of our legal system, that would be completely consistent with an educational purpose. But by posting it on the wall, it creates an endorsement by the school that's different than simply studying it. So here, again, the issues are identical. So the only difference between now and in 1980 would be the makeup of the court.
So that's interesting, because the what you just told us explains somewhat the argument that's being given by supporters of that law in Louisiana. They're saying that the Ten Commandments are a historical legal document, not a religious document. Is that why they're making that argument based on the past rulings?
Absolutely. And in fact, in the Louisiana law, the posting itself has to contain the historical context in order to place it in the educational curriculum, as it were. And there's something called the Lemon Test. I won't dive into this very deeply, but the Supreme Court has a 3-point test when it determines whether something is excessively entangled with religion. And this is designed to get around that. But the issue is, does that posting at the end of the day, does that posting itself, as opposed to studying something in a book, does the posting on the wall create an impermissible endorsement of religion? That's what the court will be deciding in this case.
One last quick question for you. We noticed there's been a change in Donald Trump's gag order in the New York hush money trial. What's the judge allowing?
Well, the judge partially lifted the ban. Now, the ban that existed throughout the Donald Trump trial prevented Donald Trump from criticizing the court staff, the witnesses. He couldn't criticize any of those. Now, after the trial is over, the judge agreed to lift the part of the ban dealing with witnesses and some of the court staff, because the trial is already over. But the judge also mentioned that after the sentencing, which will take place in about two to three weeks, once the sentencing occurs, the complete ban will be lifted. And that will be a point of appeal for the Donald Trump legal team because of the constitutionality issues with any gag order.
Brad, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That is KMOX legal analyst Brad Young, partner at Harris Dow, Fisher & Young.